A Dred Scott Nation. Part 2.
On May the 5th, 1961, American astronaut Alan Shepard piloted the first U.S. manned mission into space. Americans looked up to the skies with optimism of discovering new horizons, new possibilities. Well, some Americans, anyway, because at the same time of this hope for some, there was despair for many who had a different reality. It was a society of black and white, stark contrast of a segregated society, separate but definitely not equal. What do we aspire for when we brag about conquering space, but at the same time want to conquer and rule over others? Who are we when we are proud of going towards the stars, but continue to create havoc on Earth? No other species on Earth except mankind treat their own the way we do. Until it was decided by the people that it was time for a change, blacks started to strike and take to the streets to try to bring about the more equal society.
We will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. We'll be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual. Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
Ultimately, Dr. King was able to get the Civil Rights Act signed by the president. And around 50 years later, this would lead to having a black president in the White House. So, was King's dream achieved? Years old, Vondrick Myers, who went to the store near his home to buy a sandwich, but he would never make it back home as he was shot 8 times by police outside of the store. Police say he was carrying a gun. Eyewitnesses say he had a sandwich in his hand. No one was tried for his murder. Vondrick's name is added to the many others who have been recently shot by police. I wanted to talk to Vondrick's parents, but between police and demonstrators, it was very difficult to do.
They just killed him. To this day, the police still cannot articulate a reason why they stopped Vondrick and his friends down the street. There was no reason for them to stop them. They initiated, Jason Flannery initiated that stop and then went on to kill him and blame it on him. Right. Vondrick was executed because he was down, unable to move when he was shot in the head. The police department has said that they don't see any need for charges to be issued. Of course, they're not going to say that. They're investigating themselves.
Right.
I believe that we will win.
But they trick us into believing I'm the solution. If you elect me, we'll all be free. It's a bunch of garbage. You know what I'm saying? I don't care. It's from the alderman, the president. And you know what people say? Well, once we get a black president, things. Now, the highest office in the land, right? The president. When did he address the issues of race? I mean, without beating up on black men for not being fathers. And that's, when did he address it? Ferguson, when the whole world had to address it.
As violence and oppression continues against blacks, some Americans have mobilized to say they will not stand for this any longer. From Ferguson to Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, Baltimore, and beyond, Americans are demonstrating. They are blocking streets, having die-ins, and overall taking to the streets to try to bring what they call police terror to an end. Others have rallies and meetings trying to educate the masses as to the reality on the ground. At the University of Chicago, activists say they want the U.S. government to be charged with genocide for crimes that it has committed against black Americans.
American police kill a black person every 28 hours. American police kill a black person every 28 hours. While imprisoning and assassinating our civil rights warriors who fight against these same crimes, the state is responsible for torturing and displacing indigenous people with violent spiritual, physical, and sexual assault, along with poisoning all of our ecosystems. Rape is the second highest crime committed by police. 500 people tasered to death in the U.S. Over 12,000 human lives lost to police genocide. We implore this committee to seek redress for these extrajudicial, state-sanctioned executions, electrocutions, murders, and other crimes documented in our report. We charge torture. We charge genocide.
My brother and best friend was brutally battered and permanently damaged by the Chicago Police Department. The result of such damage left half of his face unrecognizable, his tongue barely attached to his mouth, 22 stitches, 2 facial fractures, bruised ribs, scrapes all over his body. I'm here to charge torture for my brother. We're here to charge torture, and we're here to charge genocide.
I had some police brutality problem for a while. They've been going on for a while, whereas they were extorting me for 25% of my money, and they were using, since I wasn't going for that, they were harassing me. They were raping me in my house, videotaping me.
And tell me how you're walking with a walker now.
I'm walking with a walker because my legs have been beat when I'm sleeping. I have more than 1,000 bruise marks on my butt. Body. Every time I try to put something on paper, they or make a report, they beat me up in the house. They're breaking my house, beat my legs. They're cutting my hair. They are saying that this is my imagination. It's a complete system of destroying other people's life to try to make people slaves for them. I got pictures of it. I show the doctor, I told the FBI, the police, they laughed at me. And then I told them what they did in my house because they said I was crazy. It didn't happen. But you can look at my belly and see that it did happen.
This has become a familiar scene in the black community. Here is another mother who has lost her child and shows me where her son was killed. Murder, poverty, and despair has become the norm. Another example of this despair is the singer and rapper of this documentary, Harvey Shaw, who lost his 17-year-old brother, was killed by police.
So right now, like I said, we're going through South St. Louis, head on the Cherokee area. On Cherokee right now, the State Street area, where you have pretty much is a blend of different races, but it's also on every single state street down here is also another set, another gang set. And you have a lot of Hispanics and African Americans over in this area down here. Out to South St. Louis, you know, after like 1 o'clock, I believe it's like 1 o'clock, they have a curfew. And that's for all the people over there, especially for young black males, that if you out on foot, even if you're at the gas station, they calling them jump out boys, pull up in those SUVs or them vans. And if you out there, that's subject to arrest. And really what they looking for is just warrants. I mean, if you don't have no warrants, they probably going to search you. If you got a cigarello, that's paraphernalia. Some reason they going to have to incarcerate you.
I got a phone call from my daddy that was in 2002. I picked up the phone, and it was something different in his tone that I can just hear. They got Stanley. I'm like, what you mean they got Stanley? Who got Stanley? Police. They killed him. And I just remember it felt like somebody just took my whole heart and just pushed it up my stomach and was like, what you gonna do about it? This is the life you know that you're living in. Now it hits your little brother. All I could see was his big old smile that he had on his face. Never was a negative person, always was smiling and laughing. Now he's gone off the face of the earth. That somebody willingly took the life of my brother who was law enforcement. Declared war so publicly, so intensely on the young black male across America. And it was so visible on how they let them just lay in the street. Like, we're gonna show you, we're gonna let you soak this in, young black man, that we are here to annihilate. We are here to destroy. A police officer is a 2014, go back in 1714, he was called an overseer. Now he's called an officer. One had a whip, now this one has a gun. The whip would just get you back into chains, and if you talk after that, you get hung. You get castrated. Now, you just dead. They don't even want you around because they figure you survived through all that torture and you still out here? We just gonna kill you now. That's the picture that's getting painted. This is not my system. It's not good for my system. This system is not good for anybody's system that's created or designed to have any type of love inside of them. This system is designed to, you either gonna get aboard the hate train or you gonna get annihilated. And they're making that very clear.
I don't have any fear of any reprisals from the government or anyone else. I do believe that there are those out there that are watching and maybe would take action, but I don't concern myself with them. I just concern myself with doing the work, you know, for this movement. My grandfather was asked the same question, whether he was fearful. And he said that he was probably a dead man already, but he said that he had absolutely no fear of anyone or anything, you know, other than Allah.
The history of blacks is filled with resistance groups which try to liberate themselves. One example of this is the black liberation group MOVE. In 1985, this group based in Philadelphia, which was active in organizing its members, was surrounded by 600 federal agents and policemen and was bombed by the U.S. government, in which 11 people, including 5 kids, were killed and 66 houses destroyed.
Where governments lie, God does not lie. Where governments change, God does not change. And I'm through now. But let me leave you with one more thing. Governments fail. And the United States of America government, when it came to treating her citizens of Indian descent fairly, she failed. She put them on reservations. When it came to treating her citizens of Japanese descent fairly, she failed. She put them in internment prison camps. When it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education, and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating her citizens as less than human. God damn America, as long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme.
I was teaching in Cape Town. I was talking on this particular morning about the difference between Western concepts of personality formation and African concepts of personality formation. The Western I just mentioned, Camus, Cartesian, I think, therefore I am. I rebel, therefore I am. I did it my way. Africans say I am because we are. It's communal, not autonomous. If you see God as white, you see God as male. You see God as up there above hierarchically. You see God as choosing you above other people. Then you see other people hierarchically to be used as things not equal to you. Three-fifths of a man in the constitution of the country. And your theology determining your anthropology then determines your sociology, how you order your society. You can order your society so that blacks are non-persons. So that the Dred Scott for this project decision makes perfectly good sense. There are no rights you have. I can put on a black robe and be a preacher on the day and a white robe at night. In fact, have my lynchings on Sunday. Civil disobedience, non-violent civil disobedience to bring about change, which is what? First Sunday this month, several black churches in this nation engaged in civil disobedience. What did they do? They disobeyed the law about the red lights in the street. They went up and blocked traffic, some of them powerfully, for 8 minutes. That's how long it took Eric to die. And then they admit they dispersed. They're making a statement, disobeying the law. You see the difference between that and staying on the sidewalk, walking down the sidewalk, obeying the police? Is it me, or do you see the difference? This, the sit-ins, we broke the law. The law said you can't sit here. And black bodies said, yes, we can, and sat there. That's disobeying the law, all right? You walk on the sidewalk and stop at the red light, and that's not disobeying the, that's a peaceful, mamby-pamby, wimpy way of trying to show solidarity.
The first thing that has to happen is the conscious raising of the people. When you're involved in your own fight for liberation and freedom, it's a liberating feeling. You want to do more and more and more and more. And I always say, oh, I'm too old, I can't do this. It's something that everybody can do, whether they're young or old. People that can't walk good, they can make phone calls and tell people about different means. You know, people think the media is independent. The media is to reflect the interests of the state against the interests of the people. Malcolm X talked about when you go on a demonstration and then you go home and look at it on TV, you say, wait, is that the same demo that I was at? You look at what's happening in Ferguson. You look at, I always look at Fox News, you know, for a laugh or two, you know, because it's a whole different story that you get than what actually happened.
I think that we should realize that whatever it is that attracts us to any of these great personalities or individuals, it's like a mirror reflection. It's something that is reflected within ourselves. So we should look within ourselves and decide what we'll do. You know, each man is like a grain of salt toward the building block of civilization. So we shouldn't focus on what everybody else is or isn't willing to do, but on what we're going to do.
You have no rights which a white man has to respect were the words spoken regarding the Dred Scott case. How far has the society come to changing that reality? How much are we willing to sacrifice? How much are we willing to give for freedom? Again, demonstrations are taking place. People are taking to the street. But will that be enough to bring the ultimate change to the U.S.? The change that will see everyone treated equally. The change which will see blacks and other minorities no longer threatened by police and the American legal system. That verdict is still out.
There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
A significant part of the case against Roe v. Wade is that the Supreme Court was wrong to intervene in 1973 to recognize a constitutional right to abortion while the democratic process was still playing out. The article you're about to has been written by the New York Times columnist Jamel Bowie. The piece is titled, "The Pro-Democracy Argument Against Roe Falters When It Meets Reality." A significant part of the case against Roe v. Wade is that the Supreme Court was wrong to intervene in 1973 to recognize a constitutional right to abortion while the democratic process was still playing out. Better instead to have left the issue to the states, to voters and elected officials, who could then tailor their own laws to their respective communities. Justice Samuel Alito takes note of this in his draft opinion overruling Roe. In some states, he writes, voters may believe that the abortion right should be even more extensive than the right that Roe and Casey recognized. Voters in other states, he continues, may wish to impose tight restrictions based on their belief that abortion destroys an unborn human being. He concludes that our nation's historical understanding of ordered liberty does not prevent the people's elected representatives from deciding how abortion should be regulated. The end of Roe in this telling is a victory for democracy against judiciocracy. That might be true if Americans lived with fair and representative institutions. But they don't. And even if they did, there's more to democracy than just voting or the process of making a law. Which is to say that the pro-democracy argument against Roe v. Wade and the constitutional right to have an abortion falters on a few key realities. The first relates to democratic government, or the lack thereof, in the states. The second relates to the expansion of state power inherent in any effective law against abortion. And the third concerns the intimate relationship between bodily autonomy and political equality. And the first point, let's begin with a little Madison. Among the most famous essays in American political thought is Federalist No. 10. In it, James Madison makes his case for the extended republic against naysayers who argue that the United States is too big to be a functional country with a representative government. His argument, in brief, is that the smaller the republic, the more acute the violence of faction, defined here as a group united by some common impulse of passion or of interest, and adverse to the permanent and aggregate interests of the community to its citizens. The smaller the society, Madison writes, the fewer probably will be the distinct parties and interests composing it. The fewer the distinct parties and interests, the more frequently will a majority be found of the same party. And the smaller the number of individuals composing a majority, and the smaller the compass within which they are placed, the more easily will they concert and execute their plans of oppression. He concludes that, if you extend the sphere and you take in a greater variety of parties and interests, you make it less probable that a majority of the whole will have a common motive to invade the rights of other citizens. Or if such a common motive exists, it will be more difficult for all who feel it to discover their own strength and act in unison with each other. James Madison's point is that a Federalist Union will be less vulnerable to the mischiefs of faction than the states it comprises, that the influence of factious leaders may kindle a flame within their particular states, but will be unable to spread a general conflagration through the other states. Now, Madison's theory isn't airtight, mostly because it doesn't anticipate the emergence of national political parties. But it isn't wrong either. It is easier for narrow factions to win power at the state level than for them to win control of the federal government. And this, in essence, is what has happened with abortion. Last year, in a review of public opinion data, the Pew Research Center found 14 states where a majority of adults agreed that abortion should be illegal in all or most cases. State legislatures in each may well outlaw the practice if the Supreme Court overrules Roe v. Wade. But so will legislatures in states where a majority of adults support legal abortion in all or most cases. 56% of Florida adults, according to Pew Research Center, support the status quo under Roe. Despite this, Florida lawmakers have already passed a 15-week abortion ban. A similar situation exists in Oklahoma, where 51% of adults support the right to an abortion in most cases, but where the Republican governor just signed a far stricter ban into law. Then there are states like Arizona, Michigan, and Wisconsin, where pre-Roe bans may take immediate effect if Roe v. Wade is overturned. But Justice Samuel Alito might say if voters do not want their states to ban abortion, they can elect representatives who will then take steps to protect it. That's not so simple. Thanks to Alito's own votes and opinions, and those of his conservative colleagues, in Shelby County versus Holder, Rucho versus Common Cause, and Brnovich versus Democratic National Committee, state legislatures have nearly free rein to restrict voting, gerrymander in a hyper-partisan fashion, and otherwise insulate themselves from democratic accountability. A pro-Roe electoral majority might exist in Wisconsin, but the state Republican Party has gerrymandered itself into durable control of the legislature. It needs only a minority of voters to win a majority of seats. The same is true in states like Ohio and North Carolina, where, according to a New York Times analysis of public opinion data, most adults support Roe. In other words, there are a number of states, home to tens of millions of Americans, where voters may not actually have the power to elect lawmakers to protect the abortion rights they say they want. If states and state legislatures are supposed to be places where democracy happens, and that itself is debatable, then these facts are a real challenge for the pro-democracy case against Roe. Next is a matter of the abortion bans themselves. Although anti-abortion activists insist that they intend to penalize only providers and clinics, lawmakers in Republican-led states have already introduced bills that would criminalize patients as well. But even if that weren't the case, there's simply no way to enforce an abortion ban without the state intruding deeply into women's lives. Think about what it would take to establish that someone had an illegal abortion. The state and its agents would need access to everything from search results, call histories, text messages, and medical records to bank statements, social media posts, and location data. It would need to turn its attention to anyone who may have helped, friends and family included. To this point, the Texas bounty law extends legal liability in exactly this manner. The state would need to treat the womb, any womb, as a potential crime scene, with anything other than a healthy birth as evidence of a possible crime. A miscarriage or stillbirth would have to invite the same scrutiny as an abortion. There is no other place a total ban can go. Indeed, this kind of scrutiny is already part of daily life for many women, especially those who are poor, non-white, or both. The criminalization of pregnancy is not new, but it is poised to get much worse. There is a word for this, and it's certainly not democracy. Which brings us to the final problem with the idea that a world without Roe is somehow more democratic. Democracy rests, on paper at least, on the idea of political equality, that all citizens have equal standing and equal say when it comes to representation and political decision-making. But equal standing is undermined and eroded when the state can effectively seize your person for its own ends. That is, when it can force you to give birth. And the erosion of political equality has social consequences. It leads to disregard and disrespect, to treating the people in question as a subordinate class. We know this. Prisoners represent the most extreme end. They are citizens, but they're not political equals. We see it in our history as well. Before Jim Crow, there was a decades-long effort to erode the already tenuous political standing of black Americans in the aftermath of Reconstruction. To put the right to have an abortion up for debate is to put the bodily autonomy of women up for debate. There's no other way to spin it. It's just the nature of the thing. And to put the bodily autonomy of women up for debate is to degrade their citizenship, their social standing, and their political equality. Assuming Roe is overturned, there may be more legislatures casting votes over the right to have an abortion, but that's not the same as more democracy. Just the opposite. States that ban abortion will undermine the values of democracy and curtail the liberty of their citizens. Subjected to surveillance and criminal scrutiny, people who give birth in those states and those who support their right to privacy and bodily autonomy will live with a degraded form of citizenship. Democracy is substantive as well as procedural. It is a set of values as well as a set of processes. Our system can and should be much more representative than it is.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. A very warm welcome. You're listening to the IRIB English Radio. This is the program Islamic Upbringing, where we discuss problems, questions, issues the parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and his purified progeny. We have with us in studio today a very special guest, our speaker brother, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Dear listeners, brother Al-Musawi is an Islamic researcher in Qom, and we have had this pleasure to be with him in the studio. A very warm welcome, sir.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure being here.
A number of parents have questions and regarding the upbringing of their children. And I would like to start today's session with an audience question, which is almost related to our previous topic, what we were discussing. I'll start with the question. With the changing world, I am concerned about raising my kids in an Islamic way. Can you suggest me some tips that makes it easier for me? I have a few months old daughter and a 2+ year old son. It's a question from a father who is concerned about the upbringing of children. He's thinking that the world is changing, as we said in our previous session as well.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Trying to bring a child or give the child an Islamic upbringing, before you start to adopt any methods or apply any, let's call them tricks, or whatever you want to do, first and foremost, as a parent, we need to understand what kind of dangers are facing our kids. I mean, asking me that I want to bring my child an Islamic upbringing, give me tips. I mean, what is your child going through? I mean, what are the problems that your child is facing?
All right.
Is it a mental issues? Is it religious issues? Is it ethical issues, morality issues? Because there are a number of things that children go through.
That can be concerning you.
Yeah. So
That was concerning the father was a rapid changing environment.
Okay. So the rapid changing environment, first you need to understand the environment that you live in.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, without understanding our own environment, then like if you want to treat a disease, first you need to understand what causes a disease. You need to understand what the disease is and how you can prevent it.
Yeah.
Before you jump into treatment. I mean, if I have a pain in my head, I can't just go to the fridge and take a Panadol or Panamax and try to... It could be something severe. It could be, God forbid, a trauma in the head, a cancerous trauma that causing you that. You need to go get it checked out. So first, we need to understand the environment that we're in. If we have that sight into our environment, then it would be a lot easier for us to say, okay, so I have this problem here, and this is a solution for it. I have a problem there, and this is a solution for it. So that understanding, it's pretty much going to be the map, or at least, let's say, the remedy to the problems that we are facing with our children.
Yeah.
So there are a number of factors. Now, I would like to bring it to the attention of parents.
Yeah, I would want you to answer all those number of facts you want to talk about, but after a short break, the listeners stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is the program Islamic Upbringing. I have brother Sayyid Al-Musawi. Brother Musawi, you said that the very first thing we can deal with the issues and problems the parents are having, which are not less than diseases, is that to understand the cause, understand the environment. And unless and until you are not understanding the causes, you are not able to treat them.
Mm-hmm. Therefore, there are number of things that in this rapid changing world that is affecting our kids and preventing them from having an Islamic upbringing that we need to put our hands on. First, as parents, most of the times, if not all the times, I mean, I don't want to generalize, but a lot of parents, they don't know the right appropriate methods to teaching and dealing with their kids to begin with. I mean, like I said, I want to bring my child in Islamic upbringing. But by doing what? By making him read Quran, by trying to send him to an Islamic school, by, you know, just shoving information in his mind. There has to be a method. So most parents, they don't have the method. They don't have the know-how to teach their kids. So a lot of parents do not put the effort, first and foremost, to educate themselves before they educate their children. Now, as a teacher, for example, I can't teach a subject if I don't know what I'm teaching.
If you have not gone through that yourself.
Exactly. So imagine me trying to teach maths and I suck at maths.
Yeah.
It's not going to work out. So as parents, most parents actually don't know how to bring the children. Their children, they just come to this world as either an accident or a moment of pleasure, or they haven't thought it forward. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Well, if you look at the hadith of the Ahl Bayt alayhim salam, even the Prophet says, اختاروا لنطفكم فإن الأرقى الدساس. Choose for your kids. To the extent, he says, choose from a DNA perspective, because the DNA could carry traits. Right?
All right.
So, I mean, have we gone that far that when I choose my spouse, I have to check her DNA in the sense that, like, I have to do a thorough family
research?
Or is it because she looked good?
Not just looking on the
yeah,
looks.
On the appearance. Oh, she looks hot. He looks hot. Yeah. And then we get married. That's a disaster. This is what's happening today in this our day. So when I have a kid, I mean, the marriage was wrong to begin with. Now the kid is here. I just go with the flow. No, I mean, we have, as parents, we need to go and learn how, you know, what are the methods and means and tools we can use to educate our children in Islamic upbringing. So that would be the first step to an Islamic upbringing. You, as a parent, need to be very well educated into the methods. I mean, even from a Western perspective, I mean, when it comes to teaching children, even you don't even have to, it doesn't have to always be an Islamic method. So the method is always the same. It doesn't matter where you are. So you can, in the West, for example, they've done a lot of research. They have a lot of ways we can adopt ourselves and just give an Islamic theme and teach our children with it. So first, that's the first thing. So we understand that sometimes the methods that we do, the way we teach our children, is absolutely wrong. So this is the first way to understand the environment that we live in.
All right, so first thing is to understand the environment, and then you said parents need to educate themselves first before they are educating their children. Brother Musavi, I'll be talking to you after a short while. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
Regarding the sixth verse of Surah At-Tahrim, the 66th Surah of the Holy Quran, that is, O you who have faith, save yourselves and your families from a fire. Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam said, save your families from fire by enjoining them to do good and forbidding them from evil deeds.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. I have with me in studio Brother Musavi today. Brother Musavi, please continue.
The second thing that we need to understand when we want to raise our children in Islamic upbringing and understanding our environment is that we need to understand the society that we live in. See, when we live in the social media age, we have what we call them these days influencers, right? But they're the YouTubers or Insta models or Insta influencers or whatever they want to call themselves. Some of those people, sometimes they have an agenda themselves, like they are pushed by groups of people to try to take and deprive our kids of their Islamic faith and their Islamic morality, or even morality in general, because they're not working on only Muslims, they're working on everybody. And sometimes those people who are called influencers, they're just motivated by money themselves. So either they have an agenda or either they're motivated by money. Either way,
they are persuaded.
They are, yeah. They're working very hard on our kids, and they're coming, they're using a very smooth kind of cool way for, and it's easier for our kids to slip through and go with the flow with them. So as parents, you need to understand what these people are doing, what their agenda is, what are they trying to take from us, so we can at least have a countermeasure in trying to deal with them.
Do you mean to say that parents need to have some kind of media literacy before they are guiding their children?
I mean, that's absolutely necessary. I mean, it would be a crime for a parent who doesn't know what Instagram is or TikTok or Facebook, yeah, or YouTube, or not, doesn't even know how to use it, because, I mean, we always been saying in the previous sessions that we had that parents need to understand the devices that the children use.
All right.
For example, if you can't navigate to your children's web history, or you can't see who his friends are on Instagram, then that's a disaster. Because it's your job to make sure he's safe. I mean, you can't just let him go on Instagram and Facebook and all these platforms and you're oblivious to what's going on. Oh, I mean, as a parent, like, I do things just for the sake of seeing what's going on. I play games for hours and hours just to see what's happening, what's going on. I take every game seriously and I play it seriously and I try to see what kind of message they're playing. I watch every time a cartoon comes out, like from Disney or any from Hollywood, I go through this movie myself first and foremost. I try to digest the movie, see what the message is behind the movie, and then I edit the movie myself. I cut the parts I don't want my kids to see, because with movies, these are special cartoons. They're trying to push the homosexuality gender. They're trying to push the transgender. They're pushing a lot of things.
A lot of things.
And a lot of parents, oh, okay, it's just a movie. It's just a cartoon. No, it's not just a cartoon. It's an it's a brainwashing cartoon. So I cut them, I edit them, and then I get to my kids, okay, this is what you can see. Even, I remember once my little daughter, she watched Mulan, the latest Disney. I cut a lot of parts because there was a lot of reference to homosexuality. And my daughter realized that this movie was too short, and sometimes when there's a cut part, it's like, Dad, what did you do? I'm like, don't worry. This is the best version I could make. So as a parent, you have to know what these things are. If you don't, then you have a problem. You can't give your children an Islamic upbringing while the infestation, the disease is in their hands. It just doesn't work.
All right.
So you need to dive in yourself and figure out what things are and how things work, so you can at least work with it, right? You can at least prevent it. You could limit it. For example, a lot of parents, when I have this discussion with parents, a lot of parents don't know we have what we call parenting control, right?
All right.
You have applications, for example, and some of them are free, some of them are paid, where you monitor all internet access that goes through your modem.
So
I have an app where I can control what application my children can access, what website they access, and the time of access. I can give them a specific time.
All right.
A lot of parents don't know these things.
Well, so parents are not aware that they can do supervision without even letting their children know that you are supervising them, and you have some apps that are parent controlling apps that allow you to make accessible or deniable. Thank you so much, Brother Musavi, for being with us. I'll see you in another session, inshallah. Thank you so much, dear listeners, for listening to the program. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please contact us. Please feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. You can also find us on social media platforms by searching Call of Islam Radio. You can also listen to our sessions again on our official website, that's parstoday.com. Go to Call of Islam. Until another session, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.